Hey everyone, Jay here.
And Joey.
We're having a lot of fun doing this, and we're grateful to everyone who's tuned in so far. As the podcast grows, we hope to keep everything as independent as possible.
Which is why we've created a Buy Me a Coffee campaign.
Buy Me a Coffee is a great way to support us for as little as $1 or $4 per month, or $40 per year. We're still coming up with bonuses and perks, but we hope you'll consider supporting us while we iron out those things.
Interested in being the oil to this machine? You can find us at buymeacoffee.com/Jay and Joey or find the link in the show notes.
Thanks everyone and enjoy the show.
Thank you all. Let me tell you, man, if you're in Vietnam and you forget International Women's Day, like you
they just, get on your ass.
Yeah, you might as well just not even show up to work or go home. It not really talked about here in the U.S. until recently, I feel like.
Do they do the other, like Father's Day, Mother's Day, do they do those in Vietnam? Or is this like kind of a catch-all, hey, let's just appreciate all women?
It's kind of like all women. So like women in your workplace, women in your personal life.
Cool. Yeah. I'll probably do something for my wife on International Women's Day, just cause maybe I'll start that. Cause we never do anything for Valentine's, really. Mm. We're always just like, let's go on a trip. That's what we usually do. We usually go on like a short 3-day vacation or something for Valentine's Day. So
sure. Yeah.
Maybe I'll surprise her this year and do something for her.
Yeah, and since this is coming out the day after, that'll be perfect.
Yes, she'll listen to it. She'll be like,
yeah, so I hope you all had a good International Women's Day.
Yes.
Or she did anyway. So, all right.
So, man,
we
women.
Have a packed slate today. All yes. Right, welcome to episode 9 of Jay and Joey on the Record. Oh, we're so close to double digits. I'm Joey.
I'm Jay.
Jay, I'm really looking forward to today's episode, and we have one legend after another. What's in store?
So, we are going to talk about some really, really great epic albums from some really great women. Joe, you picked the theme for this week. Any reasoning behind it?
So, International Women's Day was the day before this episode was released, so we figured it'd be cool to just take a look at some real legends, look through some of the women in your album collection, and just kind of go through, because who better to talk about female artists than a couple of dudes?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. So first, speaking of some pretty rad women, thanks to Jen for supporting us on Buy Me a Coffee. I'm glad my hot takes haven't driven you away.
Nice.
And another one, this is one that I haven't mentioned to you yet. So shout out to Rachel, who is a friend in town. She was unloading a bunch of records and I scooped up quite a few, and would you like to guess which artist was included in that grab?
Lay it on me. What'd you get?
Not one, but two Dixie Dregs albums.
No.
Yeah, man.
I got... Dude, that's amazing.
Yeah,
good
I got...
You. Good for her.
Yeah, yeah. When I saw those on the list things she was giving away, I was like, yo, what? So I got What If and then Free Fall, which were the two non-live albums that came out before the album that we discussed.
Dregs of the Earth.
Yeah, Dregs of the Earth.
Have you listened to them yet?
I haven't yet, but Free Fall has their most famous hit, Refried Funky Chicken. So
Oh, baby.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped to spin that one. Yeah, diving into your collection, though, what's on deck?
We're going to kick it off with an absolute legend. We're going to be talking Carole King, second studio album, Tapestry. Mm-hmm. It was released February 10th, 1971 on Ode Records. Some quick hitter facts about Tapestry. It is the 81st best-selling album of all time.
Wow.
14 million sales certified worldwide. Diamond status as of 1995. It received 4 Grammy Awards in 1972, including Album of the Year. So it's a monster. Rolling Stone ranked this number 25 on their list of 500 greatest albums of all time.
It's pretty cool because I don't think I realized it was on Ode Records, which gives it more of kind of an indie lo-fi sound. I mean, honestly, the only other thing I know on Ode Records is Cheech and Chong. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of Ode Records either. So, I mean, you've obviously heard of it. I had not actually heard of it before listening to this album. So that's interesting to know. That's more of an underground kind of label. You know, for those of you, I kind of talked about this specific album, but for those of you who don't know Carole King, she's a songwriter, been active since 1958. She was originally a staff writer at a place called the Brill Building, and she is one of the most successful songwriters of the 20th century. I mean, she wrote, oh my goodness, I can't even speak. She wrote
very old English.
Yeah, she hath writ, written or co-written 118 pop songs that have been on the Billboard Hot 100. And prolific songwriter. Some of the, and getting into this album specifically, some of the songs people are going to know on this album were maybe made famous by other artists, but Carole King wrote them. So let's kick it off here. So
sure, man.
Side A, any particular standout tracks, anything you want to talk about here?
This was strong. Like, this was a absolute powerhouse. So, like, of course, it opens up with I Feel the Earth Move, like, so well known. I mean, it's just a monster.
So she plays the piano on this one too. The little syncopated tumbling down when she like comes down, mm-hmm. it's like offbeat.
Yeah.
I love that little vocal run there. And she's just, it's just amazing. The piano really kicks ass on that one.
Yeah. There's a lot of just kind of dirt and gristle overall.
Yes. Yeah. She's got that kind of, it's a warm voice, really. Her voice is very warm, but it does have a little bit of dirt to it.
And it's interesting to hear that on a track like So Far Away, which has like just this little chill and kind of like tinge of longing. It's quite a pleasant track. It feels like mid-autumn in New York City. You know, throw your coat on, you're walking around the park, it's a little gray out, you're just contemplating what's going on, but there's still this kind of sandy quality, and not in a bad way. It's just it's rough, and like it adds.
That's a very, very lovely song. Her vocals are great. Her piano playing is really beautiful on that one too. It's really just a nice track, like you said. It's Too Late is the next one. I've probably heard that song hundreds and hundreds of times, but I've never actually listened to the lyrics. So, and I really kind of focused on the lyrics this time, and I got even more out of it than I normally, you know, would have. It's kind of about a blameless breakup in a relationship that's just not working anymore. They're just like, you know, hey, it's just not working out. We had some good times. It's over. It's too late. People are going to know that one too.
I mean, I'm kind of surprised this album has only sold 14 million because, I mean, these songs are everywhere. Like, it's so well known.
Speaking of beautiful, the next song's beautiful. I didn't really have many notes on that one.
So I've got kind of a neat story about this.
Okay, cool. Lay it on me.
So I really like this, like, it's a message about, like, inner self-perception and how it's projected and received. It came to her while she was on a subway. It was spontaneous, so she wasn't actively thinking about writing a song. She just started jotting stuff down. And because of that, it doesn't have a traditional rhyming scheme, which I liked a lot. It's just kind of very, just stream of consciousness.
Like you said, it's more free-flowing, a little bit more open-ended. I did like that one. I just didn't take very many notes on it. And, you know, I mean, honestly, I was caught up in the music because it's so good. Like, she's great. I don't know, rolling along here, Way Over Yonder. That's the last one on the side A. That was a little slower, but again, I really like that one again.
Yeah, it's really powerful. This is one my dad once played at his funeral. That just kind of tells you what kind of track it is.
My mom always says she wants Norman Greenbaum's Spirit in the Sky played at her funeral. So that's the kind of person my mom is. It's a good track.
Yeah, that sounds like a good time.
It does. I mean, that's not a bad funeral. I'd get up in the aisles and dance to that one. Where You Lead.
Where You Lead.
People are going to know that.
Oh, yeah.
My wife texts me from upstairs when that one came on. She goes, Gilmore Girls with like 6 exclamation points. So that's where that one's from if you haven't heard. You have seen Gilmore Girls?
Yeah. Have you seen it?
Some.
Yeah, only in passing. Same. But it's funny you say that. Yeah. Yeah, that's my note is Yep, the theme for Gilmore Girls. Carole King was actually, she had a guest spot on that show for a few episodes. She was a shop owner. Yeah, because I remember my wife was watching it in the background, or it was in the background of what I was doing, and I was like, wait a second, that's Carole King. So yeah, I know we have some Gilmore Girl fans out there, so soak in this moment, because I don't know the next time we're going to talk about that.
All right, so rolling along here, Will You Love Me Tomorrow? I had no idea that she had written this song. I was more familiar with it because it was originally performed by a group called the Shirelles in the early 60s. And then just diving into this, the Wikipedia entry for this song lists somewhere around 30 different versions of it by different artists, including a one by a band featuring Ronnie James Dio called The Prophets in 1962. So I really want to get down on that. I haven't listened to it yet, but I really want to.
Speaking of the Shirelles, there is this unbelievable video on YouTube of Little Richard appearing live on a TV show in the UK in 1964. The Shirelles perform that song, and man, what's really cool about it is it doesn't have that track like how most live things were in the 60s and 70s, where it was just someone lip syncing. The whole concert is one of the coolest things I've ever seen captured on film. I get chills every time I watch it, usually around like the 20-minute mark. I'll post that, but the Shirelles just like crushing it without a lip syncing is just so cool.
Nice, dude. I love it. I'm absolutely going to check that out. Looking forward to it. So Carole King's version here features, again, backup vocals by James Taylor on this one and Joni Mitchell. It's a little slower and, I don't know, maybe kind of more mature sounding than the Shirelles version. So rolling along here, number 10 on the album, Smackwater Jack. Kind of a totally different song, completely unlike anything else on the album, both lyrically and musically. It's a little bit more up-tempo. Kind of reminds me of a Jim Croce song, but Bad Bad Leroy Brown, like that same kind of vibe.
Yeah, that like twang, and it's got some deep bass to it, yeah.
And then the last track on the album, A Natural Woman, prior to that, in parentheses, You Make Me Feel. If you don't know that one, somehow you need to crawl out of the rock you've been living under.
Another massive hit
she wrote for Aretha Franklin. I mean, come on. What a monster. Like, just going through this and listening to this album, it's just incredible what a prolific songwriter she really is. Is terrific and massively influential. I really, really like this album a lot. Really, really impressed. I liked it quite a bit. And I can see why it's such a high selling album.
For sure. Even punks and metalheads can like Carole King. Let's all come together for Tapestry.
Next on the list here, we've got Linda Ronstadt, Don't Cry Now. This is Linda's fourth studio album. Came out October 1st, 1973. On Asylum Records. How familiar are you with Linda Ronstadt?
I think Linda Ronstadt is just an alt country god. This album is very much in my wheelhouse and things that I have loved and always loved and will always love. This album was just kind of the start of an unbelievable tear. Like, her next five albums were just setting the earth on fire. I mean, she was just on a tear.
Again, I gotta say, I wasn't super familiar with Linda Ronstadt, in particular, this album, but it was terrific. I'm happy to admit I've been missing out, and I really, really am looking forward to taking a deeper dive into this kind of stuff. You know, Linda Ronstadt, for people who don't know, I mean, she is, again, another monster in her field. She's very diverse. She's recorded all different kinds of music, rock, country, opera, Latin. She's won 10 Grammys, a couple country music awards, an Emmy. Like, she's a monster.
Yeah, and so, she has a lot of albums. I know she's retired.
She does. Now, but so, diving on in here, since you're more familiar with Linda than I am, thoughts on the first side here?
I like opening with I Can Almost See It. It's a very heavy, hard track to start things off with. So you take Another Train, but the tracks look the same. Like, what a poignant line about just being in a rut and trying to escape something but not being able to. And some real delightful harmonica.
That's what that was actually the main thing I took away from it. I really liked the harmonica on that one a lot. Good guitar too. It's just a really good country song. I liked that one a ton. You know, rolling along, you've got Love Has No Pride, another one that's just kind of a slower song, but really pretty. I love her voice. She's got such a powerful voice.
No one's going to rip your heart out like Linda. Maybe Emmy Lou, but it's close.
So Silver Threads and Gold Needles, track 3.
Yeah, so this song's kind of cool. She takes this classic country song from the like mid-1950s. It's just kind of this skillful, carved out tune on empowerment and liberation. Just really packs some line dance ready groove into it.
One to Jackson sing it.
Yes, yeah, yeah. One to Jackson sing it originally. And like it was a big deal when that came out in the 1950s. I mean, you know, speaking about independence and, you know, from a woman's perspective in 1950s, like I'm clutching my pearls here.
And she's not the only person we're going to talk about today that kind of stepped outside of what was expected.
Yes.
That, you know, that kind of, so rolling along here, Desperado is track 4. It's an Eagles song. I can totally see her doing this just because of the, you know, the music of the Eagles kind of fits along with what she's doing here. Tremendous on that one. I like her version actually better than the Eagles version, which I like a lot. I have several Eagles albums. I like the Eagles, but I like her version of Desperado even better than theirs.
I would absolutely agree with you. I think it's interesting how quick of a turnaround this was, because this cover came out like 6 months after the original. I don't like the Eagles. And to me, she made the song good.
It's funny you say that, because Glenn Frey actually has harmony vocals on one of the tracks on side B. Rolling into side B, we got Sail Away, which is a Randy Newman song. Probably like her version better than Randy Newman's version.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It's still way too poignant, almost 50 years later. It also made me go down a rabbit hole of, remember that Enya song? Sail away, sail away, sail away. Doo. That like new age song from the 90s.
I was never a big Enya guy, so I can't say that I know exactly what you're talking about. I went
down a deep rabbit hole when I saw Sail Away. I was like, ooh, let me listen to that Enya song. Now, ooh, let me listen to this song. And yeah, I got kind of distracted, had to come back to Linda.
Unfortunately, it makes me think of Styx. Not that the Styx song's that bad, but it's not great. It's okay. It's okay. It's probably one of the better Styx songs.
Yeah.
But Colorado, that's the standout track for me on this album. I loved that song. I loved the vocals on it.
Did it make you feel a sense of pride now that you've been there?
It did. I did. I enjoyed it.
This is a good take on the Flying Burrito Brothers did this song. I didn't really notice this until side B, but the harmonies on this album are so freaking good and so impactful, yet so soothing.
You know, speaking of harmonies, the next song is The Fast One. That's the one where Glenn Frey is providing the harmonies on that one.
A lot of fun. Sounds very up-tempo. And then you hear, it's no wonder I've been crying. It's no wonder I've been blue. And that's just such a classic alt-country move where it's like, oh man, all right, we're picking up the pace. We're coming to life. And then boom, things are miserable. Things are tough. But
it's let's sad. Have a good
yeah.
Time. Yeah. Yep. I hear you. I don't really have many more notes from here on out just because, again, I was caught up in the music. Like I really, really enjoyed this more than I expected to. And that's not to take anything away. I just wasn't familiar. I just didn't know Linda Ronstadt. I was shocked. It got mixed reviews, which kind of surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. Put her on the Mount Rushmore alt country when it gets built.
For sure. I loved it. I'm looking very much looking forward to listening to more of this and similar things. So thank you, Linda, for kind of opening my ears up to this kind of stuff. All right. Next up is one that I do have a little bit more familiarity with. We're going to talk about Heart, Dreamboat, Annie. This one was released on February 14th, 1976 on Mushroom Records. This is the debut album for Heart. We've already talked about a Heart album. The one after this, Little Queen. Joey, what do you got on Dreamboat Annie here?
Based on what we've talked about in the past, I really dig Heart. So this is maybe, I think this might be the first one where I listen to it on vinyl as well, because I do own this. I bought this at an nice antique store in New Hampshire. Probably only cost like $1 or $2. It sounds like it only cost $1 or $2.
A little poppy.
Yeah, it had some love on it. But I listened to it the way God intended.
This is the one we were talking about when we talked about Little Queen, when they broke away from the Mushroom record label. This is the one that Mushroom kind of did some just honestly bullshit, had some weird promotional stuff. They kind of insinuated, you know, the incestuous relationship between the two sisters and stuff like that. So this one actually caused Heart to split and get off of that label, which good on them for that. But just kind of diving in here, first song on the album is Magic Man. And what a way to kick off an album with just that squealing guitar, just just right off the bat.
Yep.
I love the gusto to lead the album off with that just guitar and then into, you know, Magic Man.
A debut song and a debut album.
Yes.
Come on. So we have this old car, like God bless it, but it only has a radio and tape. And I was driving back from Charlotte the other day and Magic Man came on the radio. And there was one of those car transport big rig vehicles in front of me. And I just had this thought that was like, how cool would it be if I just pumped the gas and like hit a ramp just right and like went flying over the cab while like Magic Man was playing. And there would be this like freeze frame, like a 70s movie. But yeah, I mean, this is such a rad leadoff song. I really like that loopy, strange, false finish, too.
Me, too. And the synth in the instrumental break portion of this is just so cool. It's such a badass song, and it's really, really freaking cool. I don't know. People have heard Magic Man. It's on the radio. It's awesome. It was a song Ann Wilson wrote. It was kind of about her then-boyfriend, who was the band manager, Michael Fisher.
Oh.
So it's a little autobiographical there.
I wonder how awkward that was.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking too. But so rolling into song two here, Dreamboat Annie. Dreamboat Annie is the obviously title of this album. It's also kind of three little songs that are on the album. It's like a three-part kind of song. So this first part is Dreamboat Annie, Fantasy Child. It's a soft little kind of floating along song. It's real pretty.
Yeah, I just love how it flows through and moves into the next track, which is...
And that's my note. So it just perfectly floats into the intro, the acoustic intro of Crazy on You, which is such a beast of a track. The acoustic freaking playing at the beginning of that.
Yeah.
Wow. Throughout the whole album, the combination of the electric guitar and the acoustic guitar is phenomenal, and particularly on this song, but across the entire album, the two playing off of one another, you know, Nancy Wilson on the guitar, Roger Fisher's playing the electric guitar on most of these tracks. It's tremendous. They do such a cool job of playing off of one another here. Some pretty good drums on that one too.
Yeah. Yeah. I love everything about that track. It's probably the track that hooked me on Heart. It just smashes right into you. Love it. Cool movement, cool transitions.
And then the fifth song on the album's Dreamboat Annie, the actual Dreamboat Annie song that didn't have anything in parentheses around it. Just another one that's just kind of floating along there.
That leads into the B side, correct?
Yes, correct. Which kicks off with White Lightning and Wine, which is a funky, funky, still rocking pretty good song.
Yeah, it's kind of blues, kind of country, a little honky-tonk. It's got that sweet woodblock.
Sing, Child, Sing. What an interesting song that one is. Funky, it's heavy, it's got some damn flute in there. I love that one, man. It's got a really cool instrumental break with the bass and the guitar playing off of one another. That one's probably the surprise track on this one to me, because I didn't know that. I'd never heard that one. I've heard it, but...
Yeah,
it really stood out.
I have very similar notes. I've got the funky. It's definitely weird. It's a little Zeppelin. It's got a little choral to it. It's like a little culty. And then, like you said, that flute solo, man, I love it. Like, just breaking it down with the rhythm section and a flute. Like, there was just such a tight window of time in music where you could have a flute solo, and they nailed it.
And that's the only song on the album in which someone else other than Ann or Nancy Wilson is credited as a writer. So the guitarist, Roger Fisher, also got a writing credit on that one, as well as Steve Fossen, who is the bass player. So you got four different people getting credit for writing that bad boy, but it was awesome.
Oh, and the flute solo, I'm pretty sure, I'd have to look this up, but I'm almost positive that was Ann Wilson.
On the flute?
Yeah.
Interesting. I would like to know that. That's give me 1 second. I'll tell you. Yeah, it was. Yep. That's cool. I didn't know that. I should have looked that up before we got to that point. But yeah, she did play the flute on that one.
I remember looking it up because I was like, I wonder if there was.
They like bring a studio? In a flute player.
Yeah. But no, apparently, yeah, it was just her showing off how ridiculously talented she is at everything.
And then it finishes up with Dreamboat Annie reprise, kind of the third part of the three-part Dreamboat Annie there.
The thrilling conclusion. I actually listened to the three Dreamboat songs in a row on Spotify. Together? And they're kind of cool how they all fit together. I don't know, they're just so freaking smart.
We kind of rolled through this one pretty quick, but it's such a badass album. I mean, what else can you say? It's heavy. It's soft. Mm-hmm. They're all super talented. The Heart is just so damn good. It's a great debut album. What a great debut album.
You know, you all know I love Heart. Mushroom Records were a bunch of turds.
All right. So Heart kicks ass. We all know it. We all love it. So we're going to go hopping and skipping along here into Carly Simon's Anticipation.
It's Anticipation. You ever see Rocky Horror?
Yes, absolutely. So this is Carly's second studio album. Came out November 1971 on Elektra. Joey, how familiar are you with Carly Simon?
Not too terribly. Like, I knew the name some. I had always overlooked her just because to me it wasn't loud, abrasive, or experimental enough. Sure. I'll tell you one thing that always drove me nuts was there were so many freaking boomer articles about, like, what is you're so vain about? And I'm like, who gives a crap? Like, why are people still talking about this shit when it's, you know, fucking 2015, like, get over it. Who cares who You're So Vain is about? Like, it's a 45-year-old song.
Yes,
it's not like you're finding the Ark of the Covenant. But but with that said, I did go in with a much more open mind. And this was lot better than I was anticipating. Funny, I put than I was anticipating, not thinking about how the album's called Anticipation.
Same. I mean, totally the same. Not super familiar. I know the hits. My mom liked Carly Simon, I'm pretty sure. Mm. I've heard some of these growing up. But it wasn't super overly familiar with her.
Yeah.
Diving into side A here. Leads off with the title track, Anticipation. Kind of relates her feelings about, you know, getting ready to go on a date. It's a burgeoning early stages of a relationship. Apparently, the date that she was going on that this is being written about is with Cat Stevens.
Oh, really?
AKA, what is it?
Yusuf Islam, maybe?
Oh, there you go. Yeah. But apparently, actually, this one and the next song were both written with Cat Stevens in mind.
Really?
Which is kind of cool.
Like, as a heartbreak or?
I don't know. Yeah. So, Anticipation, like I said, it's about, you know, a burgeoning relationship. Could go a lot of different ways, you know.
The storytelling is very vivid.
Yes. And then the next one's more along the lines of, you know, kind of mocking people who are seeking fame. Maybe a little bit. The next one is Our First Day Together, which is a little bit more somber. And there's definitely some, she's doing some like minor chord kind of stuff in that one.
Yeah. It's
really cool stuff.
I put that it's quite solemn. So there's a lot to unpack. It's only 14 lines long. It's almost like a sonnet.
Yes. It is. The Girl You Think You See is track 4. Again, her vocal range is super interesting in that one. I like the piano and the acoustic guitar on that one. Mm-hmm. I like the lyrical content. You know, she's, I'll be your queen, a foul-mouthed marine, a Mary Magdalene to please you, just to please you. So, I mean, kind of cool.
It has this like old school blues progression at time. And then it keeps moving into almost like cabaret.
Yeah. Did you have any standout tracks on side B is where you kind of move into the next section here?
Share the End was a standout for the wrong reason, because I was really digging the build up. enjoying the drum rolls. You know, the piano felt like it was falling from the sky. And then there's a fucking children's choir.
I know it. I knew you wouldn't like that. But she does. So what I'll say about that one is that song does have a little bit more attitude to it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, she's hitting some super low notes, some super high notes. She's got a little bit of growl behind that choral singing of the children. It's a little bit more epic. I actually did really, really like that song. I know you are not a children's choir fan, so there you go.
Yeah, the final minute it's pretty good in spite of that children's choir to me, because the song kind of unravels, and like you said, there's that guttural scream.
Yes.
That I think is pretty fantastic. But, like, children singing ruined everything for me.
I get it. And the last one is actually a Kris Kristofferson cover called I've Got to Have You. I thought that was a good bookend to the album. Probably my favorite song on side B. It's got a little bit more rock and electric guitar on that one. Again, a little bit more attitude.
Yeah, so as I like to say, who does a Kris Kristofferson song better than literally anyone else other than him? I think he's a great songwriter. I don't really like him as a performer or singer. I like this works towards a kind of a light crescendo with some shredding that was very unexpected for me.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I meant by the electric guitar. Like, there was a little bit more attitude on this one. It's kind of it's not monotonous, the album itself, but you know, a lot of the songs kind of sound similar to one another. And when you do something like this one or Share the End, where it's kind of stepping outside that with a little bit more attitude, a little bit, it's always going to catch my attention. And I thought the same on that one too.
Sure.
Last one up for today, we're going to talk about Joan Jett's debut album. It was released twice.
Mm-hmm.
Once it was just called Joan Jett. My version was released a year later. It's called Joan Jett Bad Reputation. It's her debut album. It was released in 1980, like I said, and then reissued by Boardwalk Records in 1981. So a little interesting story about that really quick here. The original release in 1980 was actually kind of independently released by Jett and producer Kenny Laguna. They took it to a bunch of record labels. Nobody was interested in it. So instead of like continuing to hunt for a label that would publish it, they decided to fund the pressing of it themselves.
That's pretty awesome. And it's kind of surprising that people weren't interested in it, given the hype and success and familiarity of the Runaways.
Right. So this is her first album after leaving the Runaways, or after the Runaways kind of disbanded. Kind of surprising nobody jumped on board. And I think some of that is the fact that she is a woman in
mm-hmm.
this, you know, rock, punk rock sort of scene. You know, maybe, I don't know what their problem was, if they thought people wouldn't jump on board or what, but
yeah, it's so weird to me because, I mean, it has everything from that era that I love packed into it. And it's just kind of astonishing how nobody saw that. And I think it has to boil down to that. Like, who's going to pay to see a woman sing this?
Yeah, it's so weird. Like, as I was researching it, they even said like the initial pressings were like sold directly to concert goers, and then Laguna's driving around in his car selling them out of his trunk to record stores. Like,
that is nuts.
What the hell?
Oh, real quick, you mentioned your wife bought this.
She did, yes. So my wife bought this at a record store in Longmont, Colorado, who I don't remember the name of the store. It's very, very overpriced, but it is. It's super overpriced, but their stuff is always in really, really good shape. And this one was no exception. It's really clean, nice album.
Was she always a Joan Jett fan? Was she kind of a punk kid growing up, or do you know?
She's a country gal.
Oh, okay.
So she likes country. So, but she saw this and she knows. She knew the songs on here.
Sure.
And said, I'm going to pop by, nice. By that bad dog for, I think, paid $20 for it, but I think it's worth it. Diving into track one here, Bad Reputation. Our second TV theme show song of the week.
Yes.
This one was a theme show for Freaks and Geeks. Pretty straightforward punk rocker, but fun lyrics, gritty. She really hits the end of all of her lines with a growl. It's pretty sweet.
This is just an absolute statement track. I love it. This is just an all-time punk rock track, in my opinion. Of course, it makes me miss Freaks and Geeks, but...
What a show.
I almost said Freaks and Greeks. That'd be a pretty interesting concept.
It makes total sense, too, because, you know, it's, to me, anyway, I mean, she's basically saying, especially what we just talked about, a woman in this you know, realm, saying, I don't give a fuck. You know, I am who I am. I'm a badass. I'm going to play rock music. Here I come. Like, it's awesome.
This song was just a personal theme for me and a life philosophy for a large chunk of my life growing up. I was pretty much living in detention and in school suspension. I just did not care. And I felt like this spoke to me so much.
It's catchy too. I mean, attitude and all that stuff, and you know, but it's also a catchy tune. Track three is You Don't Know What You've Got, kind of a fun little three chord punk song. I the one thing about this album in particular is you can tell, you know, there's a lot of different influences on what she's doing on these tracks. Yes. I mean, there's stuff that's, you know, late 50s, early 60s influence. There's glam rock, there's punk rock, all these different influences, but she really makes it her own too. So it's just a kick-ass album.
Like, it's very light and airy. And then you just get punched with that classy Joan Jett snarl. Like, the drum feel, the breakdown in the middle of the track is so great. The drums are just really outstanding all the way throughout this. I don't know who did the drums on this. I probably should have looked it up because I really did like them. But it's just got that glorious glam, like you said, like a bit of dazzle. I just love, love, love this track. One of my favorite Joan Jett songs of all time. Maybe my favorite, if I thought about it more. But it's definitely my song of the week. I think it rips.
Joel Teresi is the drummer on that one.
Joe, buddy. Good work on those.
Way to hammer them skins, buddy. You Don't Own Me. Speaking of different influences, You Don't Own Me is a cover of a Leslie Gore song from 1963. What a cool song for Joan Jett to cover. Like, don't tell me what to do. You don't own me. Don't try to change me in any way. Like, you don't own me. Like, I love it. It was great. And the piano on that one was incredible.
I think the original is one of the most beautiful and powerful songs of the 60s. Quite a statement track. Like, it gives me a lump in my throat when I hear it. I think it just, the cover does it justice very well.
I think so too.
Do You Want to Touch Me? Oh yeah. Cover that's unfortunately by Gary Glitter, who turned out to be a massive pervert. But this is a good cover. It's anthemic. You know, you're just kind of clapping over your head and kind of headbanging every time a snare gets hit. It's a really, really good cover. That
it is.
Hopefully people will remember her and not Gary.
Yeah, it absolutely. Have you ever seen the music video for this one?
I have not.
So she's like in a bikini, but she's got a trench coat on too. And then she's like, you know, do you want to touch? And then she'll like flash open the trench coat with the bikini on. But then she's also... on top of that, I mean, she's got the appeal there, but there's also scenes of her with like boxing gloves on. She's got her nice, you know, she's ripped. She's got some good muscles on her. So it's just kind of a nice little glam rock track with her attitude kind of put on top of it. It's really cool.
That's pretty cool.
It's a cool video. Let's see. Side B, another cover, Shout. Wedding song, baby. You got any thoughts on Joan Jett's version of Shout? There's a couple wedding songs on this thing.
I wish this had horns. Like, it's almost ska. I would have loved to have heard the ska fad.
So here's where we may get into my version being different from you. When you listened to it, what came after Do You Want to Touch Me? Because I'm guessing it wasn't Shout.
My B-side leads off with Let Me Go, which I really like as a launch to the B-side. It has kind of like a doo-wop meets punk sound that a lot of bands were striving for but struggled. And it kind of reminds me of Nick Lowe a little bit at the same time.
It's so funny that the different releases, because I never think about that when you're, you know, buying CDs or listening to digital versions of albums, but there are different releases and they are different in a lot of, you know, a lot of times they are different. So, you know, mine goes Shout, Let Me Go, Doing All Right with the Boys, which is another Gary Glitter song. But another fun kind of glam rock track. It had some elements that made me think of that Sweet album we listened to, actually.
Oh, yeah. I can totally hear that.
And then track 10 on my version is Jezebel, which is another kind of glam rocker. She totally owns that one. That might be my favorite track on the album.
Yeah, with Jezebel, my only qualm with this album is how cover heavy it is, because her originals are just so strong.
Yes.
And Jezebel is a perfect example of this. See, this one I also thought had pretty heavy Sweet vibes. The chorus with the double vocals and claps, like, it's just such a fun track. And yeah, I wish there were more original tunes.
Totally. I agree entirely. In fact, I wrote the same thing. Like, this is her and actually Kenny Laguna, the producer who's trying to get the promotions. They wrote this one and it's a standout.
Yeah.
You know, she, a lot of the ones I really like are hers. They're her original ones. So
yeah. And the next one for me was Don't Abuse Me. Is that yours?
Yeah. And that's her as well. She wrote that one by herself. That was not Laguna at all. So that's her. And then final track on this album is Joey's Go Home from Karaoke song, Woolly Bully.
Woolly Bully! That is my jam! I wasn't sure that I could love Woolly Bully more than I already do, but like, sure enough.
What a way cover. To finish it off. Yeah, what a way to finish off the album. Like, another one you could play at a wedding. Like, there's a couple of songs there you could blast at a wedding and people would be like, oh, hell yeah, let's go.
Oh, man, that's such a good idea. Like, I hate going to weddings, and I feel like I'm probably not going to be going to many more for the rest of my life, because so many people I know are now in baby phase. But, God, I should... That's a regret. I should have requested Woolly Bully at more weddings.
Absolutely. It would have been a hit. And actually, thank my wife for that. She's actually the one that said, hey, you could play a couple of these songs at a wedding, and it would be a fun time. So, credit to my wife on that one. I didn't want to steal her thunder there. She did definitely come up with that idea. But, you know.
Ooh, we should make a wedding playlist.
I agree.
When all this is said and done. Somebody out there get married so we can make you a playlist.
I think we'd be a pretty kick-ass wedding DJs. Kick it off with Slayer, Raining Blood. But, okay, so any final thoughts on this one? I mean, I've kind of said most of what I had to say. Tons of attitude. It's nothing overly complex, but it doesn't need to be. That's not really the point. It's all just, there's so much variety. There's tons of different influences here. It's just a cool album. It's another, you know, just like Heart, it's another really good debut album.
Easily one of my favorite albums that we've listened to so far. It's up there with Boston, Dixie Dregs, Sweet, and the Rolling Stones for what we've listened to so far.
I agree too. And actually, the Heart album we listened to this week was pretty good too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Didn't see that coming.
Yes. Let's go. Hit me with it. What do you got?
So this is going to cover two things you love, history and concept albums.
Okay.
So Jay, if you had the power to make bands or artists create a concept album on command, which badass women from history would you like to see a concept album about? And from whom would you like to see that concept album? Take a second if you need. I have one idea, and I'm wondering if you're going to say this person or not.
All right, I already got it. So okay. I would go with Boudica.
Yes.
Familiar with Boudica?
Yep.
She is a Briton, the queen of a British Celtic tribe, who led an uprising against the Romans when they were trying to take over the island. She eventually did fail in that, but she was a complete badass in the process and actually kicked the Romans' ass a couple times. You know, just some badass gal riding around on a chariot kicking Roman asses. That's pretty slick. What band would I want to make that album? I don't know. I feel like it's got to be a British band. She's a British, I think Iron Maiden could do it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that they haven't yet.
Is that the one you thought I might pick? Or
that's exactly, no? Yeah. That was the first thing I thought of.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. I was thinking Arch Enemy could do it well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we talked about some pretty badass women this week. And one of them you mentioned that you would put Linda Ronstadt on the Mount Rushmore of that, you know, that era of country artists. Mm-hmm. But if you had a Mount Rushmore of women musical artists, who would be your four women on your Mount Rushmore?
First off, I would go Emmylou Harris.
Okay.
You know, this is tough because Sleater Kinney's one of my favorite bands of all time.
Right, so who do you pick there?
Yeah, I was going to say, the one who I would pick out of that would be Janet Weiss, the drummer, because I think she's one of the best drummers of all time. But I don't know if I'm ready to commit to her yet.
Okay.
Oh, man. Nina Simone, probably Ella Fitzgerald. There are a lot of good memories associated with her, and I bought this really cool Ella Fitzgerald in Italy album when we were in Italy. Okay, so I'm going to go with someone a little different who we lost a few years ago, but Dolores O'Riordan from the Cranberries, just because I've always loved the Cranberries, and I think she has just an unbelievable voice. But that's tough because, I mean, Debbie Harry could go on there.
Yeah.
Janet Weiss could go on there.
I think you made some solid picks, though. That's a pretty powerful Mount Rushmore of pretty powerful women there.
So I think that does it. Subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, tell others about us. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at jandjoypod. We have a Buy Me a Coffee. You can find those things and our Spotify playlist through the link tree in the show notes. As we mentioned, yesterday was International Women's Day, and if you're looking for some organizations to sponsor, they have some at internationalwomensday.com/fundraising. Bustle had a good list from last year that we'll include in the show notes. And yeah, be good to each other. Shit, I was muted the whole time.
You all right?
Yeah. No, I was just like talking away, and I was like, why isn't he saying anything?